Our study continues in the second chapter of 2 Samuel. David has just been anointed king over Judah, and we find this in the fourth verse of this chapter. David had already once before been anointed king by Samuel, and that gave him the right to have the kingship when it became available. Now this anointing gives him authority over the land that he governs. And after asking of God where he should go, he's told to go to Hebron. So he moves into Hebron, which is in the central part of this tribe of Judah, and there he sets up the capital of his kingship. But in verse 8, we find some real problems arising. But Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. Now this man Abner had been a long time captain of the army of Saul. At many times he was the commander-in-chief. And with the death of Saul, of course, he would have lost this position. And he no doubt wanted to hold on to some kind of a powerful position in the nation. So in order to do this, he took the son of Saul, the one who didn't fight with Saul and the one who was not killed, it's Ish-bosheth, and he made him king. So this would be a rival king to David. It divided the nation. Abner may have even been jealous of David because at times David had out-commanded him, had out-fought him in their battles for the nation. And so we have now another king being set up, a rival to David, the son of Saul, Ish-bosheth. Now, if you're going to follow the rule of the kings and the other nations round about, of course, Ish-bosheth would have been the next rightful person for the throne. And since the people desired a king like the other nations, then it seems that most of them desired to follow after the tradition of the other nations and have the son of the king then reign whenever the king died. So Abner's the one who is backing this. He took Ish-bosheth and brought him over to Mahanaim. Now this place, Mahanaim, is over the other side of Jordan. It is on the border of Gad and Manasseh. And as we have just learned, the Philistines have made a great defeat of the army of Israel. They now seem to possess a large part of Israel itself. And so the new king wouldn't be able to withstand them. It would be maybe too much of a problem for him to have to move in and begin to reign among the Philistines. So Abner moves him over onto the east side of the Jordan River to this place called Mahanaim, and there he sets up his capital. Verse 9 says, "And made him king over Gilead, and over the Asherites, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and over all Israel." So ultimately then he was ruling over all the other tribes except for the tribe of Judah. David only had Judah and those people who were followers of him from the other tribes, but he didn't have any other tribe proper to rule over other than Judah. So we see then that the kingdom is now divided here for a time, for several years. David ruling over Judah, and Ish-bosheth ruling over the other tribes. And Abner seems to be the one who is masterminding the kingship of Ish-bosheth. Now this is a sad time in the history of Israel. The kingdom is divided. The rightful king, the one that God has anointed and wanted to be on the throne, is only reigning over a small portion of the nation, only over one tribe, the tribe of Judah. And of course, here again we see a type of the reign of Christ. The kingdom that he reigns over has been divided. The people of God have been divided. When he wanted to reign over all Israel wouldn't allow him to do so. And so there seems to be then the true king reigning over a remnant of the nation. In verse 10, Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and reigned 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. Now, from all that we can learn, Ish-bosheth actually was king for the full 7.5-year period that David was at Hebron. And this may be interpreted to mean that Ish-bosheth reigned for 2 years, and then after that, Abner more or less took over as the king, and Ish-bosheth was just king in name only, and he wasn't really reigning during the last 5.5 years. Or it may be interpreted, as some of the Bible scholars say, that Ishbosheth was 40 years old after he had reigned 2 years. But at any rate, it seems, if from all we can learn, he reigned more than 2 years. And verse 11 says, "And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months." So here we have the time set for this division of the kingdom. There's actually going to be a civil war. There's a lot of strife between these two factions, these two nations now. And we can see how this would be a thing most displeasing to God, to have his people divided, fighting among themselves, and actually having two kings when they should only have one. "And Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met together by the pool of Gibeon, and they sat down, the one on the one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool." So now we see where groups from the side that Abner is on and from the side of David, these groups go out and meet each other. One is led by Abner, the one that's representing Ishbosheth, and the other is led by Joab. And Joab is the son of Zeruiah, who is the sister of David, so he would actually be the nephew of David. Joab would be one of the major leaders now in the army of David. So they went to this pool of Gibeon, and one group sat on one side of the pool, one on the other side of the pool, to have a conference. But let's notice what happened, beginning in verse 14. "And Abner said to Joab, 'Let the young men now arise and play before us.' And Joab said, 'Let them arise.'" And what they're actually going to do is to have a contest involving the weapons of war, involving swords, and Joab is referring to it as play. "Let them arise and play," but he means let them arise and fight, and Joab agrees to this. So in verse 15, "Then there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David." So each side has 12 men to represent them in this play battle, as it's referred to by Abner. And so there'd been a total of 24 people involved. "And they caught every one his fellow by the head, and thrust his sword into his fellow's side, so that they fell down together, wherefore that place was called Helzkath Hazurim, which is in Gibeon." And that name, that long name is given there, really means the field of rocky men. So these men actually killed each other. Each one caught the other fellow by the head, probably by the hair or by the beard, and thrust his sword into his side. So this thing that was referred to so lightly by Abner as play actually is a battle to the death. It's actually a slaughter. And so we see there's going to be 24 men that die here. These men have to have a lot of courage, have to have a lot of valor to want to enter into such a deadly game. And so it's referred to as the field of rocky men. And this is a good description of the character that these men would have had to have engaged in this kind of thing. Verse 17, "And there was a very sore battle that day." So after these 24 were killed, then there was a very sore battle. There got to be a war now between both sides. And Abner was beaten, and the men of Israel before the servants of David. So David's side prevailed in that battle. Abner's men were beaten, and of course they would have had to have retreated then from the scene of the battle. And verse 18, "And there were three sons of Zeruiah there." So David had three nephews there, and each one seemed to have a prominent position in his army. Joab, and Abishiah, and Asahel. And Asahel was as light of foot as a wild roe. So this one nephew was noted for his ability to run. He could run very swiftly. And he's described as being so fast that he was as light as a wild roe. And Asahel pursued after Abner. So this man, after the side of David had really gotten the victory, and the army of Abner was in flight, he decided that he wanted to have Abner, either to kill Abner or to bind him and bring him back as a prisoner. No one else would do for him. So he pursued after Abner. Now, he was very swift of foot, so we know that he would be able to outrun Abner. And rather than take a lesser person for a prize, or for a captive, he decided to get Abner. And no doubt in his mind he thought, if we can just get Abner out of this thing, then we might be able to settle this civil war. It might be possible for us to end the warring element right here by my taking of Abner. So nothing would do but for him to take Abner. Now, although he was very swift of foot, we're going to find that he was not the soldier that Abner was. He wasn't experienced as Abner, nor as capable of fighting as Abner was. So verse 19 says, "And Asahel pursued after Abner, and in going he turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner." So no other person, no other lesser soldier would do for him. He wouldn't pursue anybody to the right or to the left, but he went straight after Abner. "Then Abner looked behind him and said, Art thou Asahel? And he answered, I am." Now, Abner was familiar with David and David's family, no doubt. He had met all these men at occasions in the past, and he recognizes him as being Asahel. And while he is fleeing from Asahel, he's looking back and talking to him. "And Abner said to him, Turn thee aside to thy right hand or to thy left, and lay thee hold on one of the young men, and take thee his armor." So he tries to persuade Asahel to pursue after somebody else. Get one of these young men. Get somebody who is your own caliber of fighter. Lay off of me. You can have a good prize. You can take one of these younger men. You can take his armor. That'll be a good symbol of your victory. That'll be a sign that you really did a good, valiant job today in this battle. But do not follow me. But Asahel would not turn aside from following of him. And Abner said again to Asahel, "Turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? Why should I be compelled to kill you? And I will have to do it. If you keep following me, if you try to take me, I'm going to have to defend myself. Why do you force me to kill you? Why do you force me to smite you to the ground?" So we see here that Abner does have a character that is to be commended. He's doing all that he can to try to talk Asahel out of this vain and foolish act of trying to pursue after him, because he knows he's going to have to kill him if he keeps coming. And he tries to persuade him not to do this. And he asks him the question, "Why should I have to smite you to the ground?" And he further says, "How then should I hold up my face to Joab, thy brother? How am I going to be able to face your brother if I have to kill you? It's going to look real bad. It's going to destroy our relationship. And so don't make me do this thing." Now, it may be that Abner really knew in his heart that David was going to be king, that David was destined to be king, and there would come a time when Joab would rise to even further prominence as one of the main captains of the army of David. And so he's looking in the future to that situation when he makes this statement, "How should I hold up my face to Joab, thy brother?" And if that be true, then Abner would have to be going against his own conscience in upholding this son of Saul, Ish-bosheth, to be the king, when really it was in opposition to the kingship of David. But we find in verse 23, "Howbeit he refused to turn aside. Wherefore Abner, with the hinder end of the spear, smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him, and he fell down there and died in the same place." So, although Asahel was very swift, he was really foolish in a lot of ways to pursue after Abner. Abner was a better soldier than he. And so we see that death can come in unexpected ways. Here's when he thought maybe Abner was afraid of him. He thought that he had Abner on the run, and Abner was trying to talk him out of doing this. He might have thought that Abner really was afraid of the encounter. Here he gets smitten with the hinder end of the spear. Abner didn't even have to turn the spear around and use the point. He just used a backward thrust, which no doubt Asahel wasn't familiar with. He wasn't expecting, and the hinder end of this spear went under the fifth rib and all the way through his midsection so that it came out behind him. And he fell down there and died in the same place. So this seemed to be a swift death for Asahel, and he forced Abner to do it. "And it came to pass that as many as came to the place where Asahel fell down and died stood still." So all the army now of David that was pursuing after Abner's and Abner's men, when they came upon this scene of Asahel being dead, they stopped and stood still. This was a startling view to them, to see one of their leaders, one of their valiant and courageous men now having died, even after they had defeated the army of Abner. Joab also and Abishai pursued after Abner. Now the two brothers of Asahel, the two other cousins of David, and they were also leaders in his army, they continued the pursuit after Abner. And the sun went down when they came to the hill of Ammah that lieth before Gaia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. So before they could actually overtake Abner and accomplish the death or the capture of him, the sun went down and they had to back off from their pursuit. So Abner and his army have been defeated. David's army has been superior upon this occasion, but really nothing has been accomplished. There's been no decisive settlement made. So we see that in verse 25, and the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together after Abner and became one troop and stayed on the top of a hill. So the next day, apparently, this army regrouped itself, composed primarily of the tribe of Benjamin. They came together as one, and they got behind Abner and stood on the top of a hill. So now they were ready to try to withstand another onslaught from David's army. And it remains to be seen now as to whether this battle is going to continue or not. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever?" Now we see where Abner has a much different view of the sword now. Just shortly before, possibly on the day before, he was telling Joab, "Let's let the men play. Let the young men play." And he was talking about playing with the sword, the deadly weapon that brought about the death of those 24 men. But now he has a different view of the sword. Now that he's been defeated, he has a lot more respect for it. And he says, "Shall the sword devour forever? Are we going to keep on killing each other? Can't we bring this needless slaughter to an end? Can't we stop this thing? Do we have to keep on killing each other with the sword? Knowest thou not that it will be bitterness in the latter end?" Here they were having a civil war. And regardless of who won the civil war, in the end, it was going to be bitterness. Both sides actually would lose. Anytime there's a civil war, the whole nation loses. Nobody really is the winner. And it's a situation that brings about mental scars that are a long time, if ever, healing in the nation. And so Abner is right here. It'll be bitterness in the latter end. This nation had civil war before, and hard to heal those scars of the civil war. So he says, "How long shall it be then, ere thou bid the people return from following their brethren?" How long is it going to be before you put a stop to this chase, to pursuing after us? What's it going to take to get you to stop the battle? Of course, Abner was defeated. He was on the run. His men had regrouped behind him, but he really wasn't in the mood for continuing the battle at this time. And so, verse 27, Joab said, "As God liveth, unless thou had spoken, surely then in the morning the people had gone up, everyone from following his brother." Joab puts the blame for this battle where it should be. He accuses Abner of being the one who's responsible. He said, "Unless you had spoken, unless you'd given the order to let the young men play, unless you'd started this thing, surely we wouldn't have had any battle here. My men would not have followed after everyone his brother. They would have gone up from doing that. So you're the one who is responsible. You're really guilty, and you're really the one to take the blame for this." So we see here where Joab absolves himself of the blame, and he really could have used this as an excuse to go ahead and continue to pursue after Abner and try to make a more thorough defeat. But he gives in to the pleas of Abner. And verse 28 says, "So Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still and pursued after Israel no more, neither fought they any more." So this put an end to the battle that day. Joab shows mercy upon the other side, upon the rest of Israel. He knows that David wants the very best for the nation and wants to have as little bloodshed as possible. And so that's the way that he goes. And Abner and his men walked all that night through the plain and passed over Jordan and went through all Bithron and came to Mahanaim. So they went back home. Abner and his men got back to their home base. And Joab returned from following Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there lacked of David's servants 19 men
and Asahel. So David's men lost 20 soldiers. And the one that they lost, that they regretted the loss of the most, seems to be Asahel, which would be the nephew of David. But the servants of David had smitten of Benjamin and of Abner's men, so that 360 men died. So the other side lost 360. One side lost 20, one side lost 360. And this was a very small loss indeed compared to some of the losses that they've had in former civil wars in this nation. But nevertheless, it was enough so that both sides had definitely felt the sting of battle. Verse 32, and they took up Asahel and buried him in the sepulcher of his father, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at break of day. So it seemed that the burial of Asahel was taking place in Bethlehem, and the other men seemed to have been buried in the field, so that they made a difference in the remains of these soldiers. However, we know that in the day of resurrection, the only difference going to be made between men is going to be those that are saved and those that are not saved. So we strive hard while in this life to have the distinction and to have the honor of being raised from the dead unto an everlasting life, to look forward to the coming of our Savior and that last day of the resurrection, so that we then will be among those that are joyful at His coming and among those that will be allowed to enter into the joys of our Lord. So we conclude the second chapter of 2 Samuel. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.